At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high quality bikes, which might lead to another discovery.
Getting
back on the saddle isn't always comfortable. Good news is, Sierra has massage guns. And chafe wipes, too. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today it's Tuesday. I was going to do a deep dive into the Super Bowl. Think we'd have all this exciting schematic stuff to discuss, all these plays that played out totally differently when you looked at them, you know, from the All 22, and kind of just got a game that was the same play and the same drive over and over and over again. The why are you hitting yourself Super Bowl? Is the way I would characterize it. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. And the person who I am so lucky to have, the only person I would want to break down a pretty bad football game with 2 days later, is my friend and my colleague, Mina Kimes. Mina, what's up?
Why do you hate defense, Bill?
Why do I hate defense? I like defense, but I feel like I don't like it when there's only one thing to talk about. You know, it certainly feels like if this was, I don't know, like a Spags game where it's like the Chiefs defense was great.
Right.
Well, they're going to show you so much different stuff. You're going to get different looks. The Eagles kind of just did the same thing over and over again, and it worked four quarters, which is not that much fun to discuss.
No, I know. This was a our guys are better than your guys Super Bowl, obviously, particularly in the trenches. I think what I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on, something that I've kind of been pondering over the last couple of days, is given the talent discrepancy, particularly again with the Chiefs offensive line versus Philadelphia, is there anything they could have done differently? That's what I would love to hear your thoughts on that. Like, do Andy Reid or Steve Spagnuolo, by the way, deserve any criticism for what happened, or was this all just inevitable because offensive line play matters so much?
Turning it on to me. I appreciate that. classic host. Yes. I would say definitely yes in the big picture, and then maybe yes on game day. So there's two different conversations to have here, right? I mean, the first one is the left tackle situation was a mess all year. That was not a secret to anyone watching the Chiefs. It's not like Wanya Morris was good for 4 months and then suddenly got bad and they had to bench him late in the season. It's not like Kingsley Suamataya was great and then got injured. I mean, it was a mess. They benched Suamataya 2 weeks into the year. They have Wanya Morris basically flailing for 3 months, finally bench him. They wait until basically Thanksgiving to sign DJ Humphries. They never bring back Donovan Smith. We don't know if Donovan Smith is, you know, able to play football or able to play at a high level. He was fine last year. It wasn't like he was a superstar, but he was a competent pair of hands. But obviously, at the end of the day, Andy Reid did not trust any of those other options. Morris was inactive for the Super Bowl. Suamataya and Humphries were on special teams. They did not play a single snap during the Super Bowl because the Chiefs did not have many extra points or field goals to kick in that game. And that, to me, is the first big picture thing, right? Is whether it was in training camp, if you didn't feel confident about Suamataya, and certainly given that they benched him 2 weeks into the year, it wasn't like the leash for him was very long. Even in week two, after you bench him, I think you have to take that big picture perspective of, okay, we have to find something at left tackle and we have to prep for it now, thinking we might not use it until November or December, but let's get that guy into our system. Let's get him comfortable. Let's get him practicing. Because by the time they got to Humphries, whether it was because he got injured, whether it was because he wasn't very good, it was too late. And obviously, you go back and watch that game, I mean, Joe Tooney is a really talented player and a really good left guard, and they're a victim of their own sort of flexibility and Joe Tooney being competent in the first couple of playoff games.
Yeah.
But he was just blown up over and over and over again in this game.
Yeah, he was obviously bad at pass protection in this one, but I think in the second half of the season and then the playoffs leading up to this, like you said, it was competent and honestly against some pretty damn good rushers.
Yeah,
like
the Texans.
But what it kind of covered up maybe is something that I, if I had to go back and look at my analysis of the game, wish I had spent more time thinking about, is how mad their run game fell apart when he moved to left tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, in the second half of the season, the first half of the season, they were actually very efficient running the football, even though they weren't explosive. In the second half, they were neither. And I think when we got to this game and I was like, oh, they, and you watched it all unfold and you saw this Eagles defense that, by the way, was somewhat vulnerable to the run. The Rams, I had Puka Nacua on my show this week. I think it's coming out tomorrow. And we talked about playing the Eagles defense. And he was like, yeah, Kyren went crazy. Like, that was why we were able to move the ball on them. He ran for over 100 yards, had like a 50% success rate. That's the Rams have this like very good underrunner center rushing attack. They didn't have that ability, right? And it was the thing they needed to do to alleviate some of the pressure on the offensive line. And they were just using quick game as an extension of the run game or replacement rather. And I wish going back, I had thought more about the Tooney move in that respect, right? Like, oh, this is something, they just can't run the ball.
Yeah, that was going to be my other point, which is you look at what they did during the game itself, and it was pass, like 12 of the first 13 or 11 of the first 12 are passes. And some of those were RPOs. I mean, the very first play of the game was a triple option RPO. I think the second play of the game was a swing RPO, a couple others here and there, certainly. But it wasn't design run game. It was not, we're going to run counter, we're going to run power, we're going to run duo, we're going to run the stuff that the Rams run. And to some extent, that might have been because they did not have Tooney at left guard and they didn't trust. I feel like every single time I'm going to say Frank Caliendo, and it's not. It's Mike Caliendo. So sorry to the Caliendo family. But maybe they didn't have the confidence that they could do it, but they had to try. And that, to me, I think was a failing. Just not having that as a counterpunch, at least just trying designed run, at least try. You know, they had a couple series where, once in the third series of the game, they were in Pacheco twice and it got, you know, 1 yard. Again, I don't know that this would have worked necessarily. Like, this is not if they would have run the ball, they would have been, you know, Saquon and the Eagles. Like, no, that was not in the cards, I think, in any circumstance. But I was surprised that that wasn't, at the very least, especially after halftime, a counterpunch that they kind of stuck with. They actually ran the ball the first play of the second half.
Yes, and it was good. It was like a 5-yard run, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, right. And then I think they got a first down, and then Kareem Hunt had a 10-yard run on a play where where Patrick Mahomes got a bad snap, and it actually helped out timing-wise. They got about 10 yards, and then that was it. And I recognize, like, the game script was terrible. And again, I don't want to make it out like, oh, if they had just run the ball, they would have won the game. Right. That's not what would have happened. They still would have got beaten. But for an offense, for a coaching staff that's so good at coming up with adjustments, so good at coming up with counterpunches, so good at finding stuff that will work, it felt like early in the game, they're trying to sort of test what the rules are for the Eagles, trying to figure out where they can poke and prod, and they never found anything. And I think even given that they were getting beat up front, kind of shocks me that they did not find some kind of solution.
Yeah, I mean, they tried all the non-running solutions for pressure, moving the pocket, getting the screens. Problem is the Eagles are just awesome against all, like, they're the best quick game defense in the NFL, right? And I do think, like, there have been games throughout Patrick Mahomes' career with Andy Reid that did play out similarly. There's been so many different eras of this offense, but there have been playoff games where I was like, damn, they really should have run the ball more. Again, with the caveat that there's our RPOs, there's often Mahomes making the decision to throw. And also, even in the run game, like you said, they were getting, you know, beat up, right? And I think that's why you made the correct point, which is we definitely can quibble with some of Andy Reid's decisions. But I have to say, this one probably falls on the shoulders of Brett Veach, their GM. And, you know, his job is hard because they go to the Super Bowl all the time. So he's never picking near the top. But when you look at some of the draft picks over the last few years in the trenches, at the top of the draft, like their late first rounders or whatever, the beginning, it's not, you know, you mentioned Sua Matea on defense. Carl Aftis has been fine, but I don't think we think of him as like the star edge rusher.
No,
FAU played a little bit, I guess. And like you have, it's hard not to compare that or contrast it with the Eagles, who again, also aren't exactly picking at the top of the draft and see pretty much all of their picks hit, right? And hit in a big way in this game.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Jalen Carter was, you know, he was not the, it was weird because like the guys we would have talked about before the game is, oh, these are the players who are going to have the biggest games if the Eagles win, were Saquon and Jalen Carter, and they were fine. Like, I think Saquon had his moments here and there, but obviously did not have big rushing numbers. And then Jalen Carter, a couple of good rushes, but so much of this was Josh Sweat and Milton Williams and Jalex Hunt, who was awesome. Brandon Graham, one of the many excellent contributors to NFL Live, Brandon Graham, came up with a couple of big rushes in this game. And it was really a collaborative, collective effort. And we saw, actually, there's a really interesting schematic thing that I like that Kellen Moore did, where they, after, I think Saquon caught a swing pass on second and 11, and they went tempo before third and long, trying to get the Chiefs out of their exotics and trying to, trying to limit what they could call on defense. And I think it was actually a really good philosophy that they didn't need because they were up by 30 points for most of the game. But the Chiefs, certainly tempo would have been a way to attack, and slow down the Eagles from substituting and using more of the rushers. Not that Jalen Carter's going to play most of the game anyway, but at least the other guys, and they had some tempo here and there, but I think it was kind of too late by the time they got to it anyway. I guess the part that with Veach that it comes back to for me is they didn't have any dudes. Like, they didn't have anyone who was going to be a mismatch for Fangio. There was no one he had to worry about doubling. Travis Kelce got plenty of attention, but I think it was more structural attention. Like, I think he was just running routes where the robber goes, and that he was running routes to places where they were more likely to double. There were some times where he was actually doubled, but Travis Kelce is not that guy at this point of his career. Outside of one game against the Texans, he's not been that guy for 2 or 3 months now. Everyone else on the offense was not that guy either. There was nobody who Fangio had to focus on that they could, sort of get any tells coverage wise. It wasn't like they could line up somebody at the number three, or they could line someone up on the backside of 3-by-1 and know, okay, Fangio is going to double this guy, or, shade the safety this way. And so that opens up opportunities for us elsewhere. And that, to me, I think was the tough part. And maybe the difference between now and 2 years ago, when Fangio was the consultant for the Eagles, is they had a lot of success with their short motion in that game with Kelce, creating leverage, creating mismatches, forcing the Eagles to adapt to it and hitting plays off of that. And some combo of the pass rush being that much better, the offensive line being that much worse, the Kelce not being as good as he was 2 years ago, and I think also the fact that they have Zach Bond at linebacker, which is something, linebackers were fine 2 years ago, but they did not have a defensive player of the year candidate linebacker who's capable of matching to all those routes and has the athleticism to blitz. Felt like that was, sort of the things they did not have last time that made a difference this time.
Yeah, I think you talked about kind of structurally how it was hard for Kelce. I mean, they played mostly quarters, right? Which was, has to be a record for the most quarters ever played. And so Kelce was constantly surrounded by bodies in coverage. And the way you beat that is you can throw over the top of it with speed. And there actually was at least one play where Worthy did get sort of open. Yep. But the problem is the pressure either got there so quickly, or Mahomes had so rattled so early in the game by it, by getting his butt kicked, that they weren't able to do the things you have to do to beat those looks, which is either run the football or throw it deep, right? And so in some ways, Bill, I just feel like the Eagles defense played exactly the way they have all year. It's like the identity didn't shift at all. There was nothing crazy with the game plan. They did some kind of fun stuff up front, but for the most part, it was pretty straightforward, top-down quarters. It was just a perfect matchup for what the Chiefs do offensively. And and I think I just kept thinking, well, Mahomes could solve this, but he couldn't. I go back to the Bucs Super Bowl where afterwards I said, I will never again underestimate offensive line play, even with this quarterback. And I made that mistake. I will say the thing that surprised me in this one, though, coverage wise, I'm not surprised because, we talk about the quick game. Mm-hmm. Eagles are so good against it. I didn't think the 4-man rush would dominate to that degree.
Yes.
That's extremely shocking.
Yeah, and certainly they were going to get their moments. The pressure rate was not dissimilar. A little better through three quarters. They kind of, faded in the fourth quarter because they were busy celebrating. But I think it was 38% pressure rate in this game and 37% the last time these two teams played in the Super Bowl.
It was 52% before it got out of hand.
Three quarters. Yeah, that's the part, I guess, is fair. Crazy. Is that it was higher earlier on. But even given that pressure rate, I mean, when you are at 37% and you don't sack Mahomes once and he can scramble for big plays and they didn't sack him once in that game and now you get him 6 times in this game, it just felt like not only was there the initial pressure, but there was just such awareness between the Eagles defenders of where to go, where to go if Mahomes was scrambling. You know, I felt like Mahomes would take that step to scramble, and he's so good at finding those spaces, and there'd be a guy there as well. It felt like it wasn't just maybe one guy winning, but it was two guys winning, three guys of those four guys winning. They got pressure with three-man rushes when they used a three-man rush in this game. I mean, I'm not, I assume the listener will think I'm biased when I, or I'm bringing this up because of the guests when I bring this up, but the game this reminds me of is Seahawks-Broncos, where it was no secret what the Seahawks were going to do on defense. It was, you know, the one of the greatest offenses in modern football history going up against them, but the Broncos never found answers. They were seemingly just shook from the very beginning of that game. And when the run was taken out of it, they didn't have any ability. I don't think they would have run the ball well anyway, but they certainly were not trying. Peyton was really struggling throughout the contest. They were playing from behind. It seemed like he was rattled as that game wore along. And even though basically every Seahawks defender got hurt during that game, every at least member of the secondary got hurt during that game, it didn't matter because they were just so dominant and so structurally hard to beat. And these Broncos could not get to the ways to attack that defense in that game.
Yeah, I think it is a good comp, not just because I'm sure most of America was bored during that Super Bowl as well. Not me. it was similarly like a very like, we're just more talent. We're just better than you. It wasn't like, hey, crazy game plan. Oh, my God. Right. This was the famous Seahawks defense that just played cover three and man coverage as well. And I knew the Eagles defense were more talented. I knew they played a style of football that matched up well with them. But I didn't think the talent discrepancy was going to be that bad or that obvious.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to the A to Z savings event at AutoZone.
Yeah, happy to be here. Can I get some rotors?
Would you like brake pads with that?
How much are the brake pads?
Free with the rotors.
Free. Really?
Really, free.
Okay, I also need some oil.
Would you like an oil filter with that?
Yeah, how much is that?
Free with 5 quarts of oil.
Free? Really?
Really, free. It's part of the A to Z savings event.
You might as well call it A to Free.
At AutoZone.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
It's perfectly browned, it's melty, it's sweet. It's the s'more you just cooked over the fire at AutoCam. That's right, Hilton brings you new ways to stay. But you don't just get nightly s'mores. You also get clubhouse happy hours to gather under the stars. All while staying in custom-designed Airstreams, cabins, and tents, and insanely cool outdoor destinations. If AutoCam sounds like a dream, it sounds like it's time to redeem those Hilton Honors points at Hilton.com. Hilton for the stay.
The next time you fly, upgrade your comfort to Emirates Premium Economy. Sink into soft leather seats with raised legrests and adjustable headrests. Elevate your dinner plans with delicious regional dining, all served with complimentary premium drinks. Enjoy endless entertainment with up to 6,500 channels, including live sports. There's no other premium economy like it. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Was there a moment for you where it went from, okay, like, yeah, this is struggling, but it's the Chiefs. They're going to figure it out, to, oh, no, they're actually doomed?
The Jeanne pick six was, I felt like it was over at that point.
That was pretty early.
I know. He felt like it was over. I mean, how many times have we seen Mahomes escape and make a miraculous throw in that moment? And I think the thing that really jumped out to me too was like, it wasn't just a gimme. It wasn't like DeJean just sitting there in the right, like he knew exactly where Mahomes wanted to go to the backside receiver in that moment. Yep. And I thought, oh my God, they know everything that Kansas City wants to do. And when we talk about the defense being well coached, I think usually when we think of like coaching, we think of like, whoa, crazy game plan, Lou Anarumo doing the drop eight or C. Spagnuolo, these blitzes. But to me, like the manifestation of coaching from Vic Fangio with this defense was just an absolute awareness of the opponent and their tendencies and a way to the way they all played and stuck to the plan. I mean, you talked about the rush, the way they all forced Mahomes up into the pocket, the style of rushing, some of the games on the outside. It just struck me as like, oh, every single person on this defense is playing football together and they know their opponent unbelievably well.
Yeah. And you even saw, I mean, we can talk about the dudes the Eagles have on defense and they're phenomenal football players, but even the backups, made plays in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, go back to that third down on the first drive of the game. I know our friend Nate Tice talked about how that was his, like, oh no, this is a problem moment. Is Isaiah Rodgers is in coverage on a pick play as the slot receiver, as the slot corner against, I want to say Hollywood. I don't think it was Xavier Worthy. I think it was Hollywood running like a wheel route, and he's just there every step of the way. It's just like they are so good at avoiding the picks. They clearly knew, especially after the Bills game where it felt like they were getting picked every single play. Like,
yeah.
Defensive backs were so good about avoiding each other. And that, you know, wasn't even, nobody was open. Mahomes almost throws a pick on that play. Later in the game, Cooper DeJean misses a play, and Avante Maddox, who barely has played this year, comes on the field, and he tips away that fourth and four throw to Hopkins. It was great.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah. Oren Burks had a couple of really nice moments, too.
Yes. Yes, the Oren Burks revenge game and the Vic Fangio revenge game after he went 0-8. Yes, vindication game is the word I was thinking of. Thank you. The only thing I would say is this. Like, yes, it's absolutely fair to say we should have seen the defensive line, offensive line mismatch coming. And certainly some people did. There are plenty of people who picked the Eagles who should rightly feel very smart about doing so. I should also mention, I forgot to say this at the beginning, you and I had, and not only you and I, but Kevin Clark and our friend George Shizano as well from Around the Horn, all of us had the same exact score prediction for this game, which was, I think, 27-24 Chiefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It did not go out that way. So we can start with that. We were not correct about this game. But maybe the devil's advocate side of me would say, like, okay, go back to all of the Super Bowls the Chiefs have played. I mean, every single time you can make a case before the game, hey, they have a defensive line, offensive line mismatch. They played two Niners teams who had great defensive lines. And last year against the Niners, they didn't have Joe Tooney at left guard in that game. He was hurt. You go to the two Eagles games, but that Eagles team 2 years ago had 70 sacks during the regular season. They were phenomenal up front. And then the Bucs game, obviously, not only did the Bucs have a defensive line mismatch, but they also exploited that and won the game because of their ability to get after Mahomes. And so I certainly feel like that is what made the difference in this game, but that's not anything really new for the Chiefs. And when I think about the future for Kansas City, because we're going to talk about both these teams and what they have coming up this offseason, really feels like this could be like the Bucs game, a moment where Brett Veach looks at this roster and says, okay, we have to re-envision how we're constructing this team around Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Yeah. To go back to the 2022 Super Bowl, Bill, Isaiah Pacheco ran for 15 carries for 76 yards, so 5.1 yards per carry with a 47% success rate. This was the whole, like, who needs a highly paid running back, right? This was like the case study, right? And obviously he wasn't himself this year. But I think when we go back and it was like, wow, that Eagles pass rush was so good. But the Chiefs offense wasn't as one-dimensional then, right?
Yeah, for
sure. I think to go to kind of what you're saying about Brett Veach and the construction of this team, the current meta of the NFL is you got to be able to run the ball. Mm-hmm. every single playoff team but Kansas City can run the ball. And I don't think, you know, that has to be necessarily what you lead with, right? Like, it doesn't have to be dominant, but you can't be inept at it. And I think that's something that Kansas City has to focus on in the way that a lot of teams, the Bills, you know, did it. They have to be able to put together a better run block. Pass protection, of course, is an issue, and the left tackle position is the number one thing. But they have to be able to run the ball. I think, I'm not saying they got drunk on Patrick Mahomes fixing everything, but it kind of felt that way in the Super Bowl.
Oh, I mean, not only drunk on Mahomes fixing everything, but so sure even before the game started, this is what we're going to do. I mean, yes, they called RPOs. Yes, they could have run the ball in those spots. But if you're leaving Mahomes the ability to make calls at the line about whether it's going to be a run or not, he's going to throw the football. He's Patrick freaking Mahomes. He should choose to throw the football. He's one of the greatest players who's ever lived. And like you said, I mean, going back to those games a couple of years ago, that was their big counterpunch post Tyreek Hill was not, we're going to throw the ball more, but just we're going to go into 12, 13 personnel. We're going to get bigger. We're going to run the football. They changed from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was very tentative at that time as a running back, to Isaiah Pacheco, who's a much different style of back, who's going to punish you for being in light boxes, who's going to punish you for not committing more to the run, who's going to punish you for playing too deep every single play. And that worked. And I know Pacheco, like I said, Pacheco had a fractured fibula. He was not himself. Clearly, they lost faith in him when he came back, and it was more Kareem Hunt than Isaiah Pacheco. But certainly feels like if you're the Chiefs, I think it's a really good point from you. I mean, that is something they have to at least have in their arsenal. Doesn't have to be the focal point of your offense. You don't have to be the Ravens. You don't have to be the 2024 Eagles. But at least making the other team believe you're willing to run feels like that's part of the calculus for getting this Chiefs offense back to where it was even a couple years ago.
Yeah. And I don't think it necessarily means, you know, they have to pull what the Eagles did and go out and sign. There aren't any free agent backs like that, or, you know, trade up for Ashton Jeanne or whatever. Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, the offensive line is, of course, the priority, and we'll see what happens in terms of bringing back Trey Smith.
Yeah.
But I would like to see them add a playmate, like a back. And, you know, I haven't evaluated the draft class yet, but maybe there's somebody in the middle rounds there that appeals. Because, yeah, they couldn't stay on the Chiefs defense, which is not – the Chiefs defense actually played really well in this one for most of the game. Yeah, but they were just on the field, like 2-1 ratio in the first half. It's just not sustainable.
Right. By the end of the game, they were just exhausted, and they should have been, like just like the Chiefs did to the Niners a couple of years earlier and the Patriots did to the Falcons in the Super Bowl a few years ago. Like that's just, there's a certain limit to how often you can be on the field before you're eventually just going to get picked apart. And the Trey Smith thing is fascinating to me because like on paper, if you're going to say, okay, we need to lean into running the football, so I think Trey Smith makes total sense. Like he's the best guard on the market. He is very good against the run. He's playing at a high level. He's young. He knows your system. Like, it makes total sense to sign him. But you have Joe Tooney making a lot of money and entering the final year of his deal. You just gave Creed Humphrey the biggest contract ever for a center, if I'm not mistaken. You have Juwan Taylor making a lot of money. And so with free agents on the defensive side of the ball, are you committing $22, $24 million a year to Trey Smith, given where the guard market went last year, to bring him back, given that you have needs probably at wide receiver? Like you said, you could bring in a running back. You probably need more playmakers for Mahomes, even given that you have Rashee Rice, given that he is probably, you're hoping he's ready to start the year, but he can't say for sure. Just feels like that is a spot where it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't decision with Trey Smith.
I feel like they're more likely to hit at back.
Yeah.
Receiver than they are on the offensive line, especially given, you know, the recent track record in the trenches has not been fantastic for them, like super recent. So I don't know. A lot of it depends obviously on the draft and how they view it. But I just feel like it's hard for me not to imagine. You remember it was after the Bucs Super Bowl, they went out and they paid Joe Tooney and obviously ended up being like a really, really smart decision. I feel like that's going to be the internal mood again. All right, whatever it takes, we got to make sure this offensive line, it doesn't look like what it looked like in this game.
Look at the other side of the ball, the Eagles. Yeah. You know what, though? At the same time, though, the Eagles, yes, have an incredible offensive line coach in Jeff Stoutland, but the places where they found those linemen, not necessarily first-round picks. Jordan Mailata was, you know, a absolute, like, one-of-one. You cannot replicate what you did to get him at left tackle. But even Mekhi Becton, I mean, the Eagles took a flyer on Becton for a one-year deal for modest money, guy who had been basically cast off by the Jets because of injuries and inconsistent play at tackle, move him to guard, and he has a great season. So they could theoretically say, okay, we trust our development process. We trust Andy Heck. Maybe we are going to try and, you know, get more depth and have more linemen as opposed to taking that $20 million a year swing, because they signed Juwan Taylor for that kind of money. And I mean, I don't know. I think Juwan Taylor is an okay player, but I don't think he's, I think there's probably better uses of $20 million a year than Juwan Taylor necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny you mentioned Stoutland or Andy Heck, but I was thinking about, and you mentioned the success that the Eagles have, you know, drafting, bringing in free agents. And it does kind of make you realize just Stoutland for them, their offensive line coach, is kind of like Spags in that, like,
yeah,
such a cheat code when you have that guy. And, you know, which isn't to say that the Chiefs offensive line coach isn't good, but obviously they also developed Trey Smith, who's been amazing. Yes. But they have a lot of difficult decisions to make. And I feel like given they have to like self-scout a little bit, like what are we good at in terms of developing or what do we need to buy? And I feel like offensive line is just so much the priority that I would be surprised if they don't try to keep him.
Yeah, I think so too. And, You flip it, though, go to the defensive side of the ball. And I promise, Eagles fans, we're going to get to the Eagles in a minute. But Justin Reed's a free agent. Tershawn Warden's a free agent. Derek Nnadi's a free agent. Nick Bolton is a free agent. Mike Pennell's a free agent. A lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, some of those more important than others. But Bolton, Reed, certainly the two biggest ones. You know, do you think you can let those guys or those caliber of players go if you're going to focus on the offensive side of the football?
I'll be interested in seeing what the market is for Justin Reed. Yeah. I was shocked, Bill, when I found out his age. What do you think it is?
I know, because he was the youngest free agent in the class when he signed last time. Yeah. It was a 3-year deal, so I'm guessing he's 28.
He's 27, but doesn't it feel like he's been in the end? I mean, because his brother played. Yes. I don't know. Just kidding. Yes. Obviously, like you said, he was a young free agent, but that one shocked me because I was like, ooh, I wonder what it'll cost. I do think he's one of the better run defending safeties in football. Also, that defense, they have so much youth on the back end. Yeah. I don't love the idea of completely, as much as you trust Spagnuolo's record with DBs, mm-hmm. I don't love the idea of wiping the slate clean. I would probably prioritize him over Bolton, to be honest. They have some depth at linebacker, and obviously they've been very successful signing and drafting guys there. I do think, though, they really need, like, speed at edge. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they're going to find it or if they can afford it. But the contrast, I mentioned to you that the Eagles, before the game got out of hand, the four-man rush had a 52% pressure rate. What do you think the Chiefs' four-man rush pressure rate was in this one?
Oh, no. I'm going to guess like 12%.
14%.
Okay.
That alone is the story of the game, right? Like, you can't win football games with that kind of discrepancy.
Yeah. And certainly with Spags, like, I understand the logic of, okay, we're going to blitz anyway, so we don't need crazy guys. Like, it's one of those things where you look at the Giants, for example, when they had Don Martindale as their DC, and it's like, okay, we've invested a lot into our front four. Now our philosophy is we're going to blitz at the highest rate in the league. Like, that's kind of a disconnect there. I can understand not having the Eagles, where you're investing a ton into your defensive line over and over and over again. But if you're going to use first-round picks on guys, clearly you care enough to invest there, and you have to hit on some of those picks. And I think Karlaftis is a good player, but again, is he the second best pass rusher on a great defense? Maybe, if Chris Jones is playing out of his mind. But Chris Jones did not play out of his mind in this game. He was good, but he wasn't the transformative player maybe he was at his best. And so that's the tough part, is I think you can make the case, lean into the secondary, because they are going to play a lot of nickel, play a lot of, a lot of heavy defensive back coverages, and you're going to blitz a lot with those guys, and finding DBs who can tackle really well, which the Chiefs really value, is tough. But it is a really fascinating question, because the bar is so high. Like, the expectations are so high. For a lot of teams, George Karlaftis would be a very, very successful draft pick. And for the Chiefs, we're like, you could do better, right? Like, just because the bar is you have to be Super Bowl caliber. Yeah. And I know they went too with George Karlaftis, but it's just tough.
You make a good point, because they have such an amazing pressure designer. And, they don't get a lot of pressure with four, but the blitz pressure that they get is extremely high. Maybe that makes you think, okay, do we really want to invest here versus the secondary? I will say, by the way, to take it back to the game, we talked a little bit about Andy Reid. I was a little bit surprised that the Chiefs didn't get more exotic with their pressures in this one. I felt like they sent a surprising number of man blitzes, which I would not do against Jalen Hurts, and he punched them for a few times. Mm-hmm. And then when they hit him with the fire zone was the interception. I thought it was going to be a very, very heavily schemed up pressure game, and it really maybe wasn't to the degree I expected. What did you make of that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I sort of wonder how much the emphasis on stopping Saquon
influenced that as well. Yeah,
and the tempo as well. I think that might have been the tough part, is you only had really a few plays where you were in position to dial up something exotic, where it wasn't. I think on first and second down, the threat of Saquon makes it so tough. And even third and short, third and medium, it's so tough. Whereas I think the point I made in my preview was, go back to that 4th and 5 in the Bills game, where they dial up the corner blitz, they have an exotic, because they know the Bills are throwing the football on the spot. If it's 4th and 3, if they get 7 yards in the prior play instead of 5 and it's 4th and 3, they might have Josh Allen design run. It might be QB dart. Yeah. And so that totally changes the playbook for me of what you can call on defense. And so because you know fourth and two is a go every single time, because you know third and five is a rundown for the Eagles in a lot of ways, I think that limits the number of times you can get into that stuff.
I also think they didn't expect Hurts to be as effective as a scrambler.
Yeah, that's also very true.
So I said on the Eagles defensive side, thing that shocked me was just how dominant the four-man rush. On the Eagles offensive side, that's the best Hurts has looked as a scrambler in years. I mean, I was like, whoa, when the first time he took off. And they did a couple
of things. So was Nick Bolton.
Yeah, right. Poor Nick Bolton, dude. They were using him the way the Bills use Milano, right, to stop, where he was like kind of a delayed rush, but like he's not very fast. And he's
that's
a great
just not what he's good at.
It's not what he's good at. So I thought it was a weird rush plan. And then the Eagles had, because they were using Saquon so much as a receiver, they had to account for him. So there were moments where there just wasn't a spy. And I was like, dang, like, I think that was kind of, I keep going back to that in this game. The thing that shocked me the most, the thing that impressed me the most about Hurts' performance was what he did on the ground, because it was just out of left field.
Yeah, not just as a runner, but also I think throwing on the run as well, because that was something for me where the numbers say Jalen Hurts is kind of a mess doing that. You want him throwing on the run. I know he threw a pick. Scramble. I think he was he moving to the right side of that play? But either way, he threw a pick. He's 4-6 for 40 yards on the run in this game, which is not, you know, otherworldly, but it's totally fine, given that's been a big weakness for him this year. And it felt like he was just really decisive, you know, with Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, the pass rush was harder, but so much of that was just him prodding and desperately trying to find some space. And for Jalen Hurts, it felt like when he went, he went. And when he scrambled, he was scrambling. Yes. And when he was, you know, trying to extend a play, he seemed very in control about where the ball was going. It seemed like the Eagles receivers were really good about finding space when he was on scramble drills. There were lots of completions underneath where he was scrambling, and suddenly it was a, you know, 8-yard completion. Not that that's going to win you the game, but it's better than throwing the ball out of bounds or taking a sack or something. And that, to me, it felt, again, going back to the defense and how it felt like they were all on the same page when it came to, okay, Mahomes is scrambling. Like, we need to be, keep our eyes out for where he's going. We need to be, you know, a collective unit. It felt like the offense in those moments for the Eagles played like a collective unit, and we're getting to space and we're being smart and we're you know, avoiding negative plays. And I think that was, even though Saquon did very little in this game as a runner, it felt like that was a real benefit for the Eagles as this game went on.
Yeah, it was like a super controlled performance on both sides of the ball. And yeah, like, I love what you said about Hurts being so, I think that's what was, maybe it's why he was so, it was he, part of the reason he looked so fast is because he was taking off early, right? So he wasn't contacted. And it, I mean, there are just so many plays. I mean, he broke the rushing record for a quarterback in Super Bowl where he just planted his feet and went. They would send five. He would see the rush lane and there was grass and he would just go because some guy would be picking up Saquon. And I mean, like, watching it back, I found it so impressive. But he was very in control the whole time, both as a runner and as a passer. And it was a really nice performance.
Yeah, certainly no, I would have picked Josh Sweat as MVP, but I have no issue with Jalen Hurts being selected as MVP.
Same. Yeah, the defense was tough because it was kind of one of those, like, everybody's balling out. Yes. So it wasn't just one guy taking over. I think Sweat was probably the most likely of the defense, but totally fine with Hurts as well.
Hungry for a great deal? We've got you. Our Circle K $3, $4, and $5 meal deals are in-store now. Whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, it's easy to find something to love with our unbeatable value meal deals. Like a hot dog, chips, and a Polar Pop, just $3. Or any flavor 8.4-ounce Red Bull, breakfast sandwich, and hash brown, just $4. Dashboard dining? How about any 20-ounce Pepsi, Mountain Dew, or Starry, and two pizza slices, just $5. Make a meal of it today at Circle K. At participating locations, visit CircleK.com for details.
It's winter, and you can now get almost anything you need for the coldest months of the year delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a ski slope delivered, but you can get dish soap delivered. Sunshine, that's a no. But a bottle of wine, that's a yes. A snow angel, sorry, no. But angel hair pasta, Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
I just MailChimped my marketing.
You MailChimped your what?
I MailChimped my marketing with AI to create an effective marketing campaign in minutes.
No, MailChimp and Way.
Yes, MailChimp and Way. Now I can hyper-personalize my campaigns across email and SMS.
You can do all that with MailChimp.
What did I just MailChimp and say?
MailChimp your marketing with the number one AI-powered email marketing and automation platform, Intuit MailChimp. Number one, based on publicly available data on competitors' customers. Plans vary. SMS available as add-ons. Visit MailChimp.com.
So flip it to the Eagle side of things, their future. Certainly some major decisions to make. This was a team that spent a ton of money this year. I mean, they're like, I imagine if like we try to be smart and we're like, oh, you got to be smart and spend money and respect the cap. And meanwhile, the Eagles have like nine players on their offense making like market value contracts, most of whom signed deals in the last 12 months. The defense has been, they've drafted a lot. Obviously, they've invested less on defense, but certainly still some high paid players on this Eagles defense, one of whom, Bryce Huff, didn't play in this game, which is like the ultimate. Howie Roseman is such a genius that, you know, they whiffed on a $17 million a year player and we don't care because the other signings they made were so good. But they have a lot of potential free agents who are going to get paid by somebody else this offseason. Josh Sweat, who's coming off the game of his life in the Super Bowl. Zach Bond, who is, again, defensive player of the year candidate and linebacker. Becton, who is going to get a lot of money in a guard market that has risen dramatically over the last couple of years. Milton Williams, who is honestly at this point, I think every person who you and I respect when it comes to the NFL has said Milton Williams is underrated. He's not underrated anymore. He is perfectly rated. Yeah. He is a great football player. He is going to get paid accordingly. I guess if you're Howie Roseman, who are you prioritizing from this group of people to bring back?
I said on Info Live on Monday that Zach Bond was my choice.
Yeah.
And it kind of is similar to what we were talking about with the Chiefs, where I was like, yeah, do a little self-scouting. The Eagles are so good at drafting and developing defensive linemen.
Yeah.
And they have, I mean, dude, Jalix Hunt was awesome in this game. What? He was really good in the postseason too.
Classic Ivy League, Ivy League support for Mina Kimes.
Yeah, I know they have N'Kobe Dean coming back from the injury, but I think what Bond did in this defense, where he was Vic Fangio's kind of jack of all trades, and he was able to move him around. And I also think, like, when I think about linebacker and how it takes rookies a second, and I just wouldn't love the idea of starting over at that position. Yeah. I also don't think it'll be crazy expensive, just given the position. So I would probably prioritize keeping him over the defensive lineman.
Can I tell you my crazy Eagles theory? That it's like a 1% chance of happening, but when I say it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, of course. Do you think Howie Roseman's weighing up a Myles Garrett trade right now?
I do. I really do.
He has to be, right?
Yeah, he has to. By the way, I asked Myles Garrett about the Eagles at the Super Bowl. Obviously, that fits his parameters of a Super Bowl team. So it wasn't particularly a spicy thing to ask. But yeah, I do. I think, obviously, they would have to make some difficult decisions, because if you trade for Myles Garrett, you're extending him and there's money to be juggled around.
Oh, sure.
But I would not be surprised if they at least put in a call. And
yeah, they're at least having a conversation about it, which I think, you know, the Chiefs, as good as, I guess the Chiefs could justify making a call for Myles Garrett, but it just seems like it just fits Howie Roseman being super aggressive, being willing to trade. And I know it's not a younger player necessarily. Myles Garrett is, I think, 29 at this point of his career, but I mean, we know Howie Roseman loves defensive linemen and loves taking a big swing, and certainly Myles Garrett. It's very rare that you get the opportunity to trade for a Hall of Fame player in his late 20s. And it's very rare that you get an opportunity to sign the best running back in the league, or one of the best running backs in the league, in his prime at 27 without any compensation. And that was, I think, one of the reasons why the Eagles were in on Saquon Barkley when maybe they wouldn't have been in on, you know, lesser backs in free agency.
Yes, I agree. I have trouble sussing out, like, the Myles Garrett market, to be honest, because
it's difficult.
It is difficult because there's so much disincentive for the Browns to move him, right?
Yes.
Beyond the fact that he's Myles Garrett financially. And also, it doesn't sound like, from what all the insiders are saying, it's going to be this haul. So ultimately, it's probably going to come down to, like, his, you know, whether or not he's actually going to hold out and all of that. But yeah, I have zero doubt that calls will be made.
Yes. So you think Zach Bond, and I think you could totally make that argument. And I mean, they will find defensive linemen. Howie very clearly will draft and move around on the draft to get guys. But I don't know, just Zach, like I know people know like Zach Bond was good this year, but when I was doing my awards ballot this year, I was running through the numbers and I'm just like, oh my God, this guy leads like the league in everything you'd want a linebacker to lead the league in.
Yeah. I can't remember where I put him on my DPOY shortlist. He was on it. I ultimately picked Surtain, but yeah, I think he is probably one of the players that benefits most from rewatching in the Kentucky NFL, because yes, just like in real time, it's not, you don't always appreciate everything that he does. I mean, dude, we talked about the DeGene pick, his interception again, that was not a gimme at all. It was an unbelievable play. Yeah, and it's funny. Wouldn't it be funny, though, by the way, if the Eagles, like, after all the way that they've approached football, Howie Roseman, or roster construction for so long, paid Saquon, and then in the subsequent offseason, his big signing was an off-ball linebacker. Just a complete change in philosophy that I think accurately reflects, you know, just the way football has evolved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about this a little bit when the Saquon signing happened. Certainly did not expect him to be, you know, have the best season maybe a running back has ever had in football, but the market's changed. And signing a running back for $12 million a year sounds like more than it is. And I think, you know, certainly nerds like myself have been someone, you know, who have been more inclined to talk about saving money on running backs, using the money elsewhere, but there's a lot that goes into that. It's not just a never pay a running back. It's not just a, you know, never find a running back valuable, that all running backs are the same. I know our friend Ben Baldwin has a website based on that, but that is not, certainly not the case beforehand, and very clearly not the case now. And I'm really intrigued to see how the running back market changes, because I sort of wonder if you're going to have these teams, you know, sort of say, okay, we never should have done this. We're going to change everything we know. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have teams chasing that Saquon kind of impact from a free agent back while signing guys who are two or three tiers below Saquon in terms of pure talent.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Like, this class is like, this free agency, it's like Najee Harris. Like, I know, I wouldn't do that. But I think it could benefit the draft. My feeling is, so my big takeaway from,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm only starting to watch them now, but my big takeaway is like, okay, if you have a really good offensive line, then it's definitely worth investing in the running back position, right? That's the kind of the Eagles story this year. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a player like Ashton Jeanty, who's going to go very high in the draft this year, I think like, ooh, if I had a good offensive line, I would absolutely take him. But you know, there aren't that many teams with good offensive line. There's no, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, this is such a misleading, like it's such, I was talking to Katie, our friend Katie Nolan, about this. It's like the perfect storm of like, okay, yeah, if you take the best back in the NFL and the best offensive line in the NFL, it's unbelievable. But how many teams come even close to fitting those parameters, and how many backs are even close to Saquon? It's actually a pretty unusual case.
Right. And then the other part that I think comes into play with the draft that is not as important is free agency is opportunity cost. Because if you're going to take Jeanty in the first round, and I think he is an awesome player, again, I have not looked at him to the extent that I will look at him before the draft, but I would not be shocked at all if he was a very good pro running back. But the opportunity cost in the first round is you're not getting an edge rusher, you're not getting an offensive lineman, you're not getting a wide receiver, all of which are usually not wide receiver this year, apparently, because every wide receiver is getting traded or becoming a free agent. But you know, certainly those positions are harder to find in free agency or on the waiver wire or in mid-tier free agency than running back. And so if you are investing a high pick on a running back, you're missing out on one of those other positions. If you're signing a free agent, you know, yes, you're spending money that you would not spend on a different position, but it's just when you're spending $12 million a year on a running back, you're getting Saquon Barkley, the perfect example for the Eagles. They spent more money on Bryce Huff, who was a player who had some upside, I think a lot of us liked, who was a undersized pass rusher with some upside, but a player who was clearly not one of the top 20 players in his position, even heading into free agency, and who has turned out to be kind of a mess. And so, you know, I think that's the difference there, is just you can get a better you have access to a better caliber of player than you do at other positions in free agency with running back right now. And you also are not denying yourself an opportunity to get a position that you want to get. Well, sure, but yeah,
I agree with you. Normally, I've just like this last class was kind of, I feel like this last group with Henry, Barkley, and Jacobs probably won't be repeated anytime soon. Like that's what's so, because I was like, ooh, which back can I give the Broncos? And I was like, ooh. Yeah.
J.K. Dobbins.
I don't want to. So ultimately, I agree with you, and I do agree with you. I just think this particular offseason is a tough case.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly it sounds like there's a lot of good backs in the draft. So there's a time where it does make sense. Is that the end of the first round? Is that in the second round, the third round? Certainly depends on how you feel about these prospects. Feel like we hit the Super Bowl stuff. Yeah. I don't think there's a ton more to discuss. Do you have Kendrick Lamar halftime show thoughts?
I don't, because my extremely lukewarm, like, hey, that was good, is apparently neither exuberant enough or negative enough to rise to the level of the discourse we're seeing right now.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think I gave it a B on Around the Horn yesterday. I'm like, it was fine, but it's also, you know, an incredibly talented performer in jeans, which is great, but doesn't feel like it was a spectacle.
You're not one of those jeans, those bootcut jeans.
I've wore those jeans many years ago. Trust me, if we were looking at seventh grade photos of Bill Barnwell, there would be lots of very similar looks to that. But obviously, I'm not Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar makes it work in a way that I do not. I always feel like I want the Super Bowl halftime show to reflect local culture. And not that Kendrick Lamar is not a super talented performer, but I wanted this to be the No Limit Super Bowl. I wanted to see Lil Wayne. I wanted to see Manny Fresh. I wanted to see Master P in a huge gold tank. I feel like have you seen the Roger Sherman tweet about the Super Bowl halftime show?
No.
There's a Roger Sherman tweet that's like, oh, you know, yeah, the Super Bowl halftime show was for older people, but now that I'm in my 30s or in my 40s, finally the halftime show is doing younger artists. And then you realize that you're the older person now, and it's actually just, you've just grown into that demographic. It feels like it for geriatric millennials like myself, it feels like it flipped. It went straight from the Paul McCartneys of the world to Kendrick Lamar. And I was like, wait, I didn't get my 90s, early aughts nostalgia outside of the one LA Super Bowl. That was the one
Super Bowl. I know. Unfortunately, like our generation is like extremely overrepresented, I think, in sports bloggers right now, because I saw many people being like, that was the best halftime show ever. And it's like, no, it was just our youth. That's why. It's fine. It was good. But it was like nostalgic.
Yes. I'm ready for my Sugar Ray halftime show, is what I'm saying. do you want to talk about Kellen Moore? We should finish up. Kellen Moore just announced like 20 minutes ago or an hour ago as Saints head coach.
Yeah, I'll say this. I think this is a coup for the Saints, because I thought that job was by far the least attractive. Yeah. And it was a reminder. It's funny. I was talking to Adam about this, because before he broke the news, we were talking about it, and I was like, yeah, like I was like, I don't know if I'm Kellen Moore. And he's like, Mina. He was like, first of all, his salary is about to quadruple.
Yeah.
And second of all, we saw Bobby Slowick last year be a hot guy and then get fired. So these guys know, hey, when one of these jobs comes up, you take it. And I said, fair. I agree with that. But I do think, like, I don't know if Kellen Moore is going to be a good head coach. I don't know if he's going to be a good leader, all of that. But I think for the Saints, it was actually an interesting, and I would be excited about it if I was a Saints fan, because, you know, maybe you're not going to be competitive anytime soon necessarily. But after seeing the work he's done now with, you know, multiple offenses adapting to skills of very, very different quarterbacks, I think he has shown a lot of adaptability and creativity. And so I'm high on it.
I mean, remember 2 years ago, we talked about this like for like months on television. I feel like the Cowboys fired Kellen Moore and said, oh, he just wants to light up the scoreboard. He doesn't want to run the football. And then they had the, you know, highest early down run rate of any offense in football, you know, for the final 12 weeks of the year. And they were great on offense. And I know Saquon Barkley is not going to the Saints, but I think your point is well taken about his ability to adapt and his ability to mold an offense to the strengths of his players. The tough part for me, and everything you said and Adam said about this being a job that, you know, it's only 32 of them, you're going to make a massive increase in your salary, you're going to get a multi-year guarantee. And this is a Kellen Moore who has now been on three teams in 3 years. So I understand just, hey, I'm going to probably be in the same place for 3 or 4 years at the minimum. the tough part for me, and everything you said and Adam said about this being a job, that it's only 32 of them, you're going to make a massive increase in your salary, you're going to get a multi-year guarantee, and this is a Kellen Moore who has now been on three teams in 3 years, so I understand just, hey, I'm going to probably be in the same place for 3 or 4 years at the minimum. The tough part for me is I don't know if the Saints are operating in reality, and that is the the hard part. But it like, but do you get a vibe from everything we hear from Mickey Loomis and everything we hear from the Saints
that they are operating?
He still has his job, and it's like, oh, you know, he was doing trust the process stuff this offseason before. He's like, oh, like you don't get it. Like, look beyond the results. Like, trust me, dude, you do not want us to look beyond the results. It's worse when you get underneath the hood on the New Orleans Saints. That's the part that scares me for Kellen Moore. Is I sort of wonder if with the Saints, obviously, you don't want to be the guy on the way down because that guy never gets the opportunity to be the guy on the way back up. I still think they have further to fall before they realize, oh, no, we have to hit bottom before we start working our way back up. I mean, Dennis Allen, ironically, with the Saints is a good example. Dennis Allen gets hired with the Raiders when they are at bottom. They hire Jimmy McKenzie. They are rebuilding. He spends 3 years trying to get them to be competent. He gets fired. They hire Jack Del Rio. Jack Del Rio is the guy who gets the plaudits for winning coach of the year for their 12-win season, and then he gets fired, of course. But like, you don't want to be the guy at the bottom. And Kellen Moore's not even the guy at the bottom. He's the guy on the way to the bottom. That's the part that would scare me if I were Kellen Moore about this situation.
Yeah, I hear you. I think you kind of hit on the central question, which is how long is it going to take for them to clean up their books, right?
Yes.
Obviously not this year. Let me pull up the 2026 cap.
The 2026 cap is going to be worse because they're going to have to restructure a bunch of guys to even get their 2025 cap looking okay.
Right now.
That's the part that scares me.
The 2026 cap table, according to Spotrac, has the Saints at...
Oh, do you pronounce it Spotrac?
We've had this conversation before. This is how long you and I have been... Yes, literally we have had this conversation before.
It's got to be Spotrac. Come on.
I don't... Why would it be Spotrac? It's spelled Spotric.
Spotrac with the T kind of being... I mean, you're the English major here. I should probably trust you over me, but Spotrac just sounds weird.
Okay. The biggest cap hit in 2026 is Derek Carr at $61 million. Alvin Kamara at $18 million, Granderson at $16 million, McCoy at $16 million. It's not, there's, I know you're saying about they're going to have to restructure. The car thing is, I think, going to be the biggest issue in question mark that they have to deal with. It would be a $28 million dead cap hit.
Would you consider trading Carr this offseason if you had the ability to do so, as Kellen Moore, if you had the leeway to do that?
Let me look up his numbers before I answer that question.
They can
2025 $50 million.
He has a $10 million bonus coming, and then I think he has like a $30 million or so base salary, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe if you eat the $10 million as part of the deal, you can maybe get the math to work. But again, I know you're Spencer Rattler hive, but
dude, I ran into him at the Super Bowl.
I saw the photo.
I asked him if he knew about the agenda, and he said yes, which made my day. And then he said he had seen all the snake emojis. He was very, very nice, by the way.
Sure.
I don't think they will.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think they will. Certainly. What would you do?
I mean, I don't think you're going to get that much. Although, I don't know, man.
The way quarterbacks are funny.
Right now, it is definitely a seller's market for quarterbacks. So
there is such
at least put out some feelers.
Like, you know, like the running back market was so young and vibrant and athletic, and it just feels like the quarterback market is just which old guy with maybe a busted body part are you going for? Do you want Kirk Cousins?
Somebody mentioned the Jets and Kirk Cousins. I was like, you think they want to go Achilles 2, Electric Bugaboo? Like, there's no way are they taking Kirk Cousins.
I am not ruling anything out with the Jets. I'm sorry. Do you think Derek Carr will be the 2025 quarterback for the Saints? And do you think he can work with Kellen Moore in the context of that offense?
I do. I think they got to figure out the offensive line. But I think Kellen Moore takes that job thinking Derek Carr is going to be their quarterback this year.
Yes, I agree. But 2026, I think this is the last year. I think this is the we are going to hit bottom in 2025, and then 2026 is the starting over for the Saints, which will take a couple of years because the cap, unfortunately, is outside of the Eagles mostly real.
Doesn't sound like you feel bad for about it or think it's unfortunate, Bill.
I there's nothing wrong with the idea of stretching out your cap to make your team work. I think it made total sense when they had Drew Brees. Didn't make as much sense when Jameis was their quarterback, though.
Taking a 10-minute victory lap on the Saints.
Well, you know, yeah. I want to transition directly from your me being totally wrong about the Eagles all year to finally finding something I'm right about, which is the New Orleans Saints cap situation.
Your confetti is the Spo track shredded falling over you as you do snow angels in it.
It's just red for all the negative dead cap for all the players they can't get.
I want better for Saints fans. I love Saints fans. I had so much fun. They've reached my favorite stage of a fan base, which is disgust and self-awareness. And now I'm like, I talked to them a bunch in New Orleans. They're great. I love them right now.
Yes, absolutely. Anytime I go to a place and the team is bad for years, I'm just like, man, I want them to be good for you guys.
I know.
Mina Kimes, you are all over the universe. Anything you want to highlight from your pre-Super Bowl coverage you want people to check out that kind of fell through the cracks or anything you want people to look out for in the coming weeks?
That interview I mentioned, so I recapped the Super Bowl with Ben Solak, but I have another Super Bowl recap / talking about some other stuff, but talking about the game a little bit with Kyle Hamilton and Puka Nacua that is coming out this week, who are very, very interesting on the game. And then my Love is Blind recap show returns.
David Dennis Jr.
We're also doing an audio version. So it's called Love is Kimes. So if you listen to this, maybe you missed the famous Bill Barnwell, Mina Kimes Bachelor recaps.
I feel like someone established a precedent for reality shows and talking about them on a football podcast, but that's just a different conversation.
I'm not putting them on the Mina Kimes pod, but
okay.
Which, you know, definitely angered folks who listened to this. But if you were listening to it and you like reality TV and you like Love is Blind, check it out. I already started watching the new season. It takes place in Minnesota, and it is so Minnesota. If you like Minnesota accents, it really feels like you're watching like Fargo. The accents are incredible.
Check that out. Of course, everything Mina does is wonderful. Mina, thank you so much.
Bye, Bill.